This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Gauteng and FMR in Cape Town.
Well, the publication of the IRP has brought much of the debate that has been happening amongst energy sector professionals amongst themselves to the fore over the last few weeks. And I think if we could produce power with the levels of debate that we're producing, the country probably wouldn't find itself in any kind of energy crunch. But it's very interesting, and rightly so. I think much of the country's deindustrialization can be partly ascribed to the astronomical increase in electricity prices from around about 2000. Which coincides with the sod turning of Medupi and Kasile. It's up almost 400% over that period, but I've got the experts on the panel who will set the record straight for us. Last Thursday, we did hear from a couple of renewable energy fund managers how they're reading the proposal, which is open for comment for probably a further 50-odd days. And for part two of our panel, it's a great pleasure to welcome. Let's welcome tonight's telephonic guest first, Dr. Tobias Bischoff-Nimps, one of the country's top energy modellers and a director of Innotrag SA. Tobias, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me. Good evening.
And in studio, we'll go around the panel. We've got Nox Msebenzi, the MD of NIASA, which is the Nuclear Industry Association of South Africa. Nox, evening.
Evening.
Next to you, we've got Sarilan Chinabu, the Deputy Chair of the EIUG, which is the Energy Intensive Users Group, the big users of power and obviously a key stakeholder in this conversation. Sarilan, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Michael.
And Chris Yellen, the MD of EE Publishers and outspoken energy commentator and analyst. Chris, always a pleasure.
Good evening, and to your listeners too.
Now, Tobias, kick us off. There's a lot of good news, but also much to debate in the plan, which sees us defer the transition to a cleaner future, essentially placed on hold for around 5 or 6 years. And last week, the fund managers said it would make little sense, now that we've built up this capacity on the project management and the delivery side, to place that renewable new build on hold. Broadly speaking, why don't we just have bid window 5 now already?
Well, I think first we need to see the good news of this IRP, which is in terms of the reporting, how the integrated resource plan is presented. It's now different to 2 years ago in IRP 2016. It now presents us with all the different scenarios, so we can actually see what the least cost expansion of the South African power system looks like. And it's now for the first time that officially confirmed by the Department of Energy. It is in writing that the least cost way of producing electricity in South Africa is a mix of solar, photovoltaic, wind, and flexible power generators. And I think that's the good news. The next question now is, what does that mean in terms of actual rollout, in terms of actual implementation? And I agree to have a gap of, depending on how you read it, between 3 to 5 years in the implementation of that least cost mix. It's probably not a good idea, because we would lose all the expertise that we have accumulated over the last 5 years in starting to implement renewables projects.
Which, Chris, then brings us to the related question of whether those two coal IPPs should go ahead at all.
Well, they have been put in as a policy adjustment. As Tobias said, the least cost scenario excludes new coal completely. But they have been forced into the mix. And I think the rationale is that there has been a public procurement process approved by Treasury, approved by Eskom, approved by the Department of Energy, and the preferred bidders have been announced. So there is some kind of legal commitment to these new coal IPPs. Of course, there could be negotiations to cancel them, but that may involve penalties. It would also involve some reputational damage to South Africa, who would have gone out to a public procurement process, all above board, transparently done, and then, after many years' delay, to just cancel it. So I think they are proceeding with these two coal IPs, knowing that they are certainly not the least cost option. They are certainly not the best option in terms of CO2 emissions. In fact, they are very serious generators of CO2 emissions. But I think from a question of just prudency and avoiding legal problems, they have been forced into the mix. But I think they will be the last new coal for a long time to come.
which marks a sea shift in the country's energy generation that we haven't seen, well, since the advent of the coal steam turbine. Cyril, from the perspective of the energy intensive users group, the cost of the country's power is paramount here, and obviously our commitments to our various climate agreements. Are you satisfied with this latest IRP that we're going to be able to contain costs, it is the least cost model, to within a level that satisfies our need to be competitive? We often hear about the need to reindustrialize the South African economy. Does this IRP satisfy that for you?
Well, Michael, if I could just articulate who the EIUG is quickly. It's an industry body. We represent a large proportion of the energy-intensive consumers. Our members make up at least 40% of South Africa's electricity, or consume that. And yeah, we welcome the this publication and the opportunity to even comment on it. And we support the just transition approach and the phased approach that involves inclusive engagement. And we are glad that the DOE has taken into account all the submissions and have acknowledged the inherent risks.
That said, though, back to my initial question on the cost of power. Are you satisfied that we're competitive, or do we need to see special agreements and deals struck between the country's energy-intensive users to ensure that we incentivize manufacturing?
Yes, I can agree with you. I just want to reiterate where the EIUG's position in this. We are technology agnostic. We're not akin to any technology. What is important to us is security of supply, reliability of supply, sustainability, and cost effectiveness. And the current mix of energy does, in our opinion, bring that forward.
Now, the one big talking point was the deferral of nuclear NOx, and by my reading of the IRP, we haven't closed the door entirely to nuclear. It's delayed it or deferred it until around the 2030s and 2040s, and obviously as an industry body, you're speaking for nuclear. I'm sure you're not pleased with that. What do you make of the IRP's treatment of nuclear?
Thank you. It is very unfortunate that after years of studies and submissions, including vendor parades and all sorts of things, we come to this point where we're saying when it comes to nuclear, we have to do a study. But other forms of energy just get a through pass like that. It's very unfortunate. I would have expected at least the minister to have said, let us carry out an extensive study and therefore uphold the current IRP in terms of proportions. To make a decision of reducing or deferring nuclear on the basis of wanting to do further studies sounds like it's unfair to nuclear. It basically says we're not comfortable with nuclear, but we're comfortable with other energy sources. And from a technical point of view, we believe that it would have been much better to have an energy mix that includes nuclear and coal and renewables, not so much the gas, which is basically imported commodity.
Why?
If you rely on imported resources, that is gas and inga, as part of your energy, that really brings serious questions about security of supply. Whereas here in South Africa, we have got uranium, we would have been much better off optimizing the energy mix that includes the nuclear, coal, renewables, and for that matter, even a bit of gas to be on the safe side. We also believe that this whole argument that the least cost is necessarily the way to go. Whenever you do planning for an economy. Cost is but one factor. You cannot always, when you go out shopping to Woolworths or Pick and Pay, you don't necessarily pick the cheapest. So this notion that the cheapest is probably is always the best is the best thing. That's one thing. And we dispute the fact that in fact that combination is the cheapest, because it does not take into consideration the added costs of storage, backup supply. When we quote costs for renewables, we do not include the costs of the backup gas in general. We don't include the transmission or distribution costs that are involved in terms of beefing up the industry.
Thanks, Doc. So you touched on a couple of things there. One, the fact that we haven't effectively costed storage, and two, whether or not lease cost is necessarily the best, and three, in fact, whether or not when we go out and source our energy, security and energy security is taken into account in these things. So Tobias, just to respond to some of those critiques, looking at what the addition of Medupi and Kusile have done in terms of tariffs, we're now seemingly in a situation where we have very uncompetitive electricity prices globally. So to go out and to add further cost by looking for an option that isn't least cost, certainly from my perspective, wouldn't seem like a great idea. But how do you respond to what Knox was saying there?
Yes, so maybe first of all, it's not all doom and gloom. The electricity tariffs in South Africa are still quite competitive. But however, we are obviously confronted with a situation where we are not fully cost reflective in the current tariff level, and the tariff will have to increase further. The question is, how do we make sure that it increases at the least? And that's obviously something that the EIUG will fully subscribe, or has fully subscribed, that we need the cheapest pathway going forward. And that now here, I just want to clarify something for my previous talker for Knox in terms of how the IRP works. The IRP doesn't choose the cheapest scenario as one scenario, cheap as in of lower quality over something else with a lower price tag. That's not how the IRP works. The way the IRP works is that it says this is the amount of electricity that we need in the power system, and this is our security of supply level that we want. So how many outages are acceptable, and all scenarios are treated on the exact same level. So we are procuring the exact same product, no matter what scenario we are looking at. That's very important to state that. And then we determine what is the cheapest way of getting exactly that product that we are looking for. So there's no such thing as comparing a high-value product that is more expensive with a lower-value product. The products are all exactly the same. It's electricity delivered to the end customer in a certain quality. And now when we talk about deviations from these costs, obviously it's important to know how much do we deviate? How much more expensive does it get if we make a certain decision in the one or in the other direction? And here the IRP 20, quote from the IRP 2018 now is very informative in figure 12. It compares the different scenarios. The so-called IRP 1 scenario is the least cost scenario. And to take one example, IRP 6 and IRP 7 are the two only scenarios where nuclear features. Now, these two scenarios are cumulatively until 2040 between 200 and 340 billion rand more expensive than the least cost scenario. So these are not numbers where we could argue, well, yes, but there are certain side effects that are more positive on that scenario than the other. These are very, very material numbers that affect the economy as a whole. And there's a huge danger if we don't follow the least cost path that South Africa is simply not competitive in the sectors that are much more important for anything like socioeconomic development and job creation, which is beneficiation of the minerals that are in the ground of South Africa. So these things are really driven by a least cost expansion.
Very important to note that, and to use the shopping analogy, Chris, we can't be, if the credit card is maxed, going out to Woolies and getting the ready-made meals anymore. We need to eat accordingly. What about the issue of cost of storage not being fully reflected in the renewables equation?
Now, I must disagree with Knox completely on this. The cost of backup has been allowed for in the IRP. Gas is the backup. Gas to power. This is flexible generation. There are other sources of flexible generation, such as pump storage and battery storage. The IRP has used gas as a backup, but could just as well have used other technologies that are available and that are becoming available and that will be available in the next 10, 20, 30 years. But they've chosen gas because it's actually the most conservative option to choose. And but so just to say quite clearly, the cost of backup is fully included in the IRP. The other thing that I disagree with Knox on is the cost of transmission. He says that it has not been included. That is completely wrong. The cost of transmission and transmission integration of the various different technologies has been fully accounted for in the IRP 2018 and has been done extremely conservatively to favor coal and nuclear and to prejudice renewables. And yet, even with this conservatism of approach, renewables plus gas, that is wind and solar PV and gas, is the least cost option. Coal has been forced in. It's not the least cost scenario, and I've explained the reasons why it has been forced in.
Knox?
You may disagree, but I don't see how these independent power producers actually sit down and do their mathematics and calculations and factor in this is what the cost of the transmission is going to be and so on. It is, these bid windows are basically on a take or pay basis.
Now the IRP has factored these in, not the IPPs. The IRP has factored these things, storage, transmission, in, not the IPPs, Knox.
But it depends on what assumptions are really built into this.
What are the key assumptions, Knox?
The responsibility to build the infrastructure to bill the customers. What independent power producers do is generate electricity at wherever they have and sell it to Eskom. What Eskom does with that electricity in terms of making sure that you and I have got this service at our doorstep in our houses is not their problem. So this is the thing. They've commoditized electricity and selling electricity as a commodity at the source of generation. Chris may be right in saying that some desktop calculation showed that if you have this type of generation, it would optimize. But it is not factoring what Eskom has always been insisting on, that there must be a limit in terms of the uptake of renewables. In any case, what is important for the country is other factors like the economic benefits, like job creations and so on. The argument has always been from the pro-renewable people who are anti-nuclear that their method or their option is the best way to create jobs. I disagree with that completely.
Tobias, talk to me about that, because the last time we had you on a panel with Pakamile Klube of NUMSA, you mentioned the fact that renewable CapEx creates a lot of jobs, perhaps not so much in the OpEx phase, but that if you have a rolling cycle, that actually keeps the jobs in creation in the CapEx stage going for several decades. Just set the record straight for me on the renewable jobs front. Are we talking about losing jobs, or are we talking about shifting jobs from coal to renewable?
We are talking about shifting jobs, but even more so, we are talking about creating more jobs in the electricity sector than we have today. And that is not something that can be disputed by any means, because we have scientific studies that were conducted by the Department of Energy that show that the job intensity of solar PV and wind is roughly 30% higher than the job intensity of coal-fired power station if we compare like for like, which means the same energy output on the one side with the same energy output on the other side, and not one individual wind farm with a mega project like Medupi, which produces 100 times more energy. So if we compare like with like, according to scientific studies conducted by the Department of Energy, 30% more jobs. And empirically, in the real world, these job numbers have been proven by European countries, by U.S. countries. The U.S. Department of Energy has conducted a very, very in-depth job analysis last year, where they show that the job intensity of solar and wind is significantly higher than of all fossil fuels. Now, that being said, that's good news in itself, because we are creating a product that is now cheaper, that can allow economic growth on the back of a low-cost, decarbonized electricity platform. And at the same time, that platform creates more jobs in itself. This is good news.
The anti-nuclear people, what they have done is really disingenuous, in the sense that they choose to compare jobs created per kilowatt hour, knowing very well that the intermittent renewable energy requires more, many multiples over the installed capacity in order to realize the same amount of energy generated by the conventional nuclear coal or whatever. But those costs are not factored in that discussion. We only shift the kilowatt hour generation because it's convenient, it reflects good numbers. But in fact, in reality, it would mean more than three times. You would need to generate electricity for use during the day. You need to produce electricity for storage. And you would need to produce electricity to cover the inefficiencies of battery storage. Yes, you may have gas backup, but that costs a lot of money.
Tobias?
First of all, I don't think the Department of Energy in South Africa nor the Department of Energy in the U.S. is known as anti-nuclear, and these numbers are from them. Secondly, I do think we still have an issue that we have to address, which is the new jobs, which are more in number, that are being created in the renewable sector, are not co-located with the jobs that will gradually, over the next 10 to 20 years, be lost in the coal industry. Coal industry mainly dominantly present in Mpumalanga and around Johannesburg. Now, that is something that we would have to address, and that's something that we would have to have our discussion around. One way would be to build renewables assets closer to where the existing infrastructure is gradually being ramped down. That has a number of advantages, not the last one being that you can redeploy existing coal miners, existing coal-fired power station workers into the renewables business, and the grid infrastructure is there already.
Into manufacturing and the like. Now, Cyrilan, I want to just shift the conversation, and we'll come back to you, Knox. I see you do want to respond there. Ultimately, from your position as the energy-intensive users, it really isn't your responsibility. You're not policymakers. The jobs issue isn't your concern. Are you concerned at all about security of supply when it comes to gas as our transition fuel as we see it, and where we're going to be sourcing our gas from? Does this pose any kind of risk?
We don't have a formalized position on gas, but what we can say about gas is that we would like to see from the IRP the cost studies and test the assumptions, because they refer to market-related versus inflation-based. We also would support a catalytic project such as the Rovuma gas pipeline if it will create jobs and use South African goods and services, and it will help grow the economy.
Chris?
Yeah, I think we need to just remember that South Africa imports the very significant part of its liquid fuels. That means crude oil, diesel, petrol, paraffin, jet, aircraft fuel, etc. And liquid fuels as an energy carrier is a bigger energy carrier than all of electricity put together. Yet we rely on imports. So we don't need to fear imports. Yes, liquefied natural gas may need to be imported. plus there are resources in neighboring countries, but the amount of gas needed is small compared to the amount of liquid fuels that we currently import. We need a lot of capacity for gas, but we don't need a lot of fuel, of gas itself. I just want to get back to this issue of jobs. Now, I know we've talked a lot about jobs created in the power sector generating electricity, but actually those are not the big number of jobs. We're talking about the economy of South Africa. And for that, we need least cost electricity that meets the quality of supply and reliability requirements. That is what the IRP does, as Mr. Tobias has pointed out. And by having the least cost source of generation, 300 or so billion rands cheaper than the more expensive options, including nuclear, we can do a lot with this economy. And that's where the real jobs are going to be created, not just in the power sector.
It does remind me of how we industrialized the economy back in the 30s with Van der Bijl. Those were the key ingredients being cheap power. Obviously, that was a different time. There was cheap exploited labor as well, which, you know, thankfully we've moved away from. But one needs those inputs in order to reindustrialize. So we have to, Knox, think about the broader economy here.
Absolutely. This is why we believe that it is important that we should look at long term instead of just looking at the cheaper. Let's just look at we are on bid window 4 thereabouts. Let's do an audit, shall we, and see how many jobs we have created with renewables. Where are those jobs created? Are they created in South Africa? You built up a solar farm, a wind farm, whatever. How many jobs are created? How many jobs are used for?
Thanks, Knox. Just quickly, Tobias, do you want to respond before we end it off?
Yes, on least cost electricity, the IEA forecast that by 2050 we'll have 50% of the electricity globally coming from solar and wind. South Africa has a competitive advantage on both. It has more sun, more wind, and more land than most other countries, which means if we deploy the least cost option, we will be more competitive than most other countries. And that's a competitive advantage that cannot be taken away, because nobody can steal the sun and the wind from South Africa.
Unfortunately, we have to leave it. Jobs. And jobs in the broader economy as well. Thank you very much, Knox Masebenzi, MD of the Nuclear Industry Association of South Africa, Dr. Tobias Bishop, NIMS Director of Intertrag SA, Chris Yelland, MD of EE Publishers, and Sirilan Chinabu, the Deputy Chair of the Energy Intensive Users Group.